Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going this week?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Now, coming up today, we are going to be talking about episode 6 of Survivor Karamoan. And actually, before we get into that, a couple of very quick things to get into. First, I'm very excited for this, by the way, Dom. Not exactly sure when. I think it's going to be probably coming up. It'll be released sometime late this week, or this weekend, early next week, somewhere in that range. We are going to be doing our first installment of coverage for Big Brother Canada. And as mentioned, very excited. This season has been very good so far. And if you're not a Big Brother fan, I've said it once. I'll say it again now. We both have always said Big Brother is a far better game than Survivor. Survivor's just a better show. If you are interested in the kind of game of Survivor, I think you would love Big Brother. And as luck would have it, all of the episodes of Big Brother Canada that have aired thus far are actually up on YouTube. So if you want to join us for that, I highly recommend getting caught up. And Dom, what else do we have to say about Big Brother Canada? I know I'm pumped.
Yeah, nothing else other than if you haven't been following it so far, it's well worth catching up on. It's been a pretty good season so far, despite the fact that the show itself is still finding its legs. I think this is a good time to do it, coming off the double eviction last week. Obviously, by the time we've recorded this segment and uploaded it, things will have moved on a bit, but I think this is the right time to get into it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And, liking a lot from some players, not liking so much from some other players. Can't wait to see how you're feeling about it, Dom. So definitely, if you're into Big Brother Canada, be on the lookout for that. And if not, get into Big Brother Canada. I think the only other thing that we want to get to before we get into some Survivor today is that next week, actually, for the show, joining us to talk about everything going on with Survivor Karamoan is going to be our old friend Albert from Survivor South Pacific, and we are very excited to have him back on. So definitely subscribe on iTunes to make sure you get that and all of our future episodes. One other thing I think we want to talk about before we get into today's new episode is some unrelated Survivor news. This is foreign-based Survivor. This is Survivor France, whatever it's called. Apparently, in the French iteration of Survivor, some guy just died, one of the contestants. Dom, you told me about this off-air. This fascinated me. What do we know about this?
Yeah, so on the French version of Survivor, which was due to start filming a few days ago, calling it Survivor might be a bit of a misnomer. I mean, it's basically the same principle, although some of the game mechanics are different, and it's much more focused around the actual survival aspect and the physical competitions. But in any case, that was due to start filming a few days ago, and one of the contestants, a guy who wouldn't expect this to happen to, who's, I think, he's like 25 years old, and by all accounts, young, fit, athletic, in the prime of his life, he had a heart attack on the first day of filming, once they got to a challenge, and then, so obviously medical rushed in to take him to the nearest hospital, and on the way there, and once he got there, he had, two more heart attacks and subsequently died. And as a result of that, presumably because it was so early in the filming, but this may have been their response anyway, they cancelled the filming of the season and everyone's currently returning home. And I think they're coming back to Paris today and in the next few days, so we should get more details on that. But for the moment, we're just hearing this. It's a breaking story.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy because obviously Survivor is something we know it's not fake. We know they're actually out there enduring everything and not getting any food or whatever. And we've had, medevacs on U.S. seasons, but this is totally crazy to me that someone could actually die playing Survivor.
Yeah, it's not completely unprecedented because a lot of countries have their own version of Survivor. So, just statistically, this is going to happen to somebody at some point, particularly given the stresses that Survivor puts on your body. But it's actually kind of a medical miracle to me that that something like this hasn't happened in the U.S. version up until now.
Yeah, I think the closest thing we've seen, at least according to how scared Jeff Probst was at the time, was Russell Swan when he got medevaced in Samoa. And I was thinking actually about that situation where hypothetically Russell Swan dies there. Do they continue playing that season out, especially with someone like Russell being as entertaining as he'd been?
It's obviously not a situation that you anticipate if you're production. So when it happens, you have to really come up with a response on the spot, and it's dictated by the circumstances. And even if you do think that it's likely to happen or you want to have a contingency plan in place, it's so difficult to imagine what the appropriate response would be because it's just something so radically different from anything that you'd expect to happen on the show.
Right, and I actually feel like I should clarify. I don't mean Russell Swan was so entertaining they wouldn't stop the season. I mean Russell Hance on The Other Tribe playing for his first time, causing all of his chaos. I think they have a hard time pulling the plug there. I think if they do cancel the season at the very least, even though everyone who played, they would never air it and everything like that. I think Russell Hance gets brought back if Russell Swan dies and the season gets canceled. I think he gets another shot.
Even if they continue filming the season and going on to air it, the way in which they have to edit it, given what happened, changes the rest of the season like it changes how the rest of the season is perceived so drastically that, you know, maybe Russell's remembered differently, maybe the whole like future of the franchise changes from that point. We don't know.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it might that be after 19 seasons, they say enough is enough. Like, someone died, and we're kind of tired of Survivor already.
Yeah, like, it's a show which was in decline at that point. I mean, like all shows were, but Survivor was no exception to that. And given the risk, like, I imagine there probably would have been legal issues, like, advertisers probably would have pulled out. It would have just created a whole host of problems for them, which maybe they decide that it wouldn't be worth a trade-off anymore.
Right, and it also puts kind of this implicit responsibility on CBS, like they're endorsing the prospect of running a show where people might die, and I'm sure they wouldn't like the PR fallout from that.
Well, I would say the next time we'll Survivor segment would be fucking amazing if that did happen.
Oh god.
Next time we'll Survivor, you know, somebody forced out a challenge, and yeah, you know, given what you've seen of Survivor before, you'd expect that, oh, you know, like somebody trips over and gets like a plus on their knee or something, but you know, they could spin it into something really incredible.
Yeah, that would be absolutely crazy. And it also actually led me to think about, like, because I've always wondered, what happens if something happens to Jeff Probst in the middle of a season? And granted, we've never seen him have anything remote come up, but it seems like if he got some serious injury or illness, I don't know what the call is. Do they have a backup host in there if he can't make it? Or does every challenge become do-it-yourself? Or does Mark Burnett jump in? Or what?
Yeah, this is very into completely hypothetical territory here. We have no idea what the response would be. And hopefully this situation will never come up. I sincerely doubt that it will, but I don't know. I don't think Mark Burnett is directly involved in the show anymore. Like, I think his production company still owns it, but like, for instance, when Scoobin was taken out in Australia, Burnett was actually there on scene as part of the stretcher team that carried him to the helicopter. Now he's, you know, two continents away, and probably couldn't be there on time, even if he wanted to be. So, yeah, I'm not sure how they would handle that.
Yeah, give Colby Donaldson a call. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Who knows? All right. So last time, I think if we're good to get into a new episode now, Dom, last time we lost Brandon Hantz, had a ton to say about that last week, talked by ourselves and also with Coach. No, I don't think we need to get more into that or anything. And I was hoping, as I said last week, actually, that episode would kind of close the book on part one of Survivor Karamoan, and that this new episode with the swap coming up and now all this camera time opening up for other people, that this would be kind of like the start of part two. So I was very excited to get into this episode, and we knew that the swap was going to come, and so I was very looking forward to that a lot.
Before the season, we expected that at this point, no matter what had happened before, there's going to be some kind of swap, and given what has happened up until now, I was really excited for that. I hope it would add some much-needed spice to the season, and especially after learning how the tribes would be configured after the swap, based on the preview that we saw, I was particularly excited because it was basically it was done in such a way that it would maximize the potential for like things being switched up a bit, new alliances forming, stuff like that. After seeing how it's played out this week though, and how it might play out in future weeks, I'm kind of disappointed because this is basically the best way it could have broken, and it still looks like it's going to be pretty predictable.
Right, I think because we talked last week about, and we'll just run through the new tribes again for people. The new Gota is Malcolm, Eric, Andrea, and Brenda from the favorites, Eddie, Reynolds, and Sherry from the fans. New Bacall is Shep, Corinne, Cochran, Don from the favorites, Matt, Michael, Julia from the fans. And the reason I think we were so much looking forward to this is the idea of if Gota does in fact have to lose, then they have Eric and Brenda who were on the outs on favorites tribe, and Eddie and Reynolds who were on the outs on the fans tribe, and those four could come together and form this exciting new coalition in this spontaneous new alliance and really flip the game on its head.
Yeah, and even beyond that, on the same tribe, you have Malcolm, who we know is, you know, a very capable player, someone who's willing to play aggressively and switch things up. We also have Andrea, who, despite maybe not doing so intentionally, has shown that she's able to stir things up and make things more interesting. And also Sherry, who has been one of the big players of the season, who might be in that mix as well. And then on the other tribe, we have pretty much everybody else. And it looks like, since Goda's not going to be losing challenges anytime soon, we're not going to see anything interesting happening over there, so we're left with the everybody else, and where things are considerably less interesting.
Right, yeah, and I think the way that we're actually going to be formatting this episode is going to be a little bit different, where what we're going to do is talk through the new Gota tribe and all of what we're seeing there. We'll get to the challenge, and then after we talk about the challenge, we're going to talk about the new Bacall tribe, because they really, obviously, were the center of the episode, and I would imagine they're probably not going to be winning next week's immunity challenge, and more on that later, because not only do I not think that they could win it, I don't think they should win it. They should be throwing this challenge, so I think Bacall is going to be the heavy focus towards the end, but we definitely do want to talk about each of the new tribes. Now, one thing that I want to talk about before we get there, however, is something that's been kind of controversial with the online fan community. You know, some people going off on Twitter about it. The method by which the swap was done. Now, obviously a draft is going to be better than a random egg draw, whatever. No point wasting any time there. Of course, always do a draft if possible. Shame on production for not doing so. That said, given that you're going to go with these eggs and leave it open to this high variance, the problem that people seem to be having is that the eggs were divided based on gender. Dom, what did you think about this, ensuring that the new tribes would be gender balanced?
Yeah, so there are various levels of conspiracy theory about this. I know Jeff Pittman on Twitter was saying that if you rewatch that scene again, you see when Jeff walks over to the fans, he has two bowls of eggs, one with four eggs, presumably for the men, and one with two eggs for the women. And I don't think this was some deliberate plot to break up some, like, Sherry and Judith. It's not like there's some dominant power couple or whatever. I think this is just part of a larger plan to have the tribes split by gender, which I think is perfectly fine. I don't think there's anything too offensive about that. I think the thing that really rustled people's dreams was the idea that the swap was rigged so that there would be a majority of favourites on each of the new tribes, right? So you had eight favourites and six fans come in, and the way it broke down, it was going to be four favourites and three fans on each tribe. I don't think there's... I don't think that theory really has legs, though, because, like, firstly, if the fans wanted to have an advantage going into the swap, they could have just won more. And, like, this was a result of the numbers they had going in and not some nefarious plot on production's part. And secondly, like, the idea that this was meant to help the favourites relies on the assumption that the favourites and the fans were both entirely cohesive tribes coming in, which we know to not be the case. Firstly, the fans obviously aren't united, so even if it had been done randomly and the fans had a majority of one tribe, it's certainly by no means guaranteed, and I would say unlikely that they would have stuck together, given that you have Eddie and Ren on the one side and Sherry on the other. And with the favourites, we know now based on secret scene and stuff that it's likely that they will stick together, but production has no reason to assume that. So, I don't see where people are getting upset here.
Right. As for the balancing of genders, I think that has been the production has gone out of their way to make sure that every swap in history, the only one I can think of that doesn't fall under this is All Stars, as it would result in the most gender balanced tribes possible. I guess Africa, they got to pick themselves, whatever. And when we see, like, when it's everyone just pulling a new buff out of a big hat, what you could end up with is something like what happened in that All-Stars thing where everyone switches tribes except Amber. Actually, you know, the more I'm thinking about it, the early seasons weren't intentionally gender balanced, but for the last 5-6 years, they definitely have gone out of their way to make them gender balanced. So in my mind, at least, that part's 100% legit. And as for ensuring that the favorites have majority on each tribe, I think when approaching a swap from a production standpoint, you should be wanting to, generally speaking, make the old tribes split as evenly as possible into the new tribes. And thus, yes, that does ensure that the favorites have an advantage on each of the tribes, and that's the fans' fault for losing the immunities.
Yeah, and we have to remember as well that in some of the early seasons, like Amazon and Vanuatu, given that they started off as tribes divided by gender balance is always going to be an issue coming into the swap anyway. So it's not like that's something which they could just ignore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, One World, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, sure, that's not the case here, but it's an issue which they've encountered before and one which I assume they just thought they might as well revisit again.
Right. Yeah, anything else to add about that before we get into the new Gota tribe?
I don't think so.
All right, so let's do this. I think, as mentioned, we're going to be talking through more tribe by tribe than in chronological order this week. Dom, where do you want to start, actually, with this Gota tribe?
Okay, let's start with the first scene, because we get to go to camp, and the first thing we see is we see the women off in the water together, and then the men off talking on the beach. And I thought this was kind of interesting. I'm not sure how much we can really read into this. Like, I don't think like the women naturally feel closer or anything, but I thought it was interesting that that's the dynamic we see right away.
Mm-hmm. See, I had no idea what to even make of this new go-to trap. They seem to be all over the place to me.
Elaborate on that a bit.
Okay, I guess it's more like what we saw in that opening scene is Sherry happily telling everyone she's happy to immediately vote out Eddie and Reynolds. She's telling them that Reynolds already played his Idol 3 merge. Reynolds and Eddie are pitching to them, like, hey, if you guys want to vote out Sherry, we're on board. Andrea's all over the place. She's making moves. She's trying to get Malcolm, see where he's at. More on that in a little bit, I'm sure, where it seems like in theory at least, and then of course you have Eric and Brenda, who could be with these fans, reversing their own fate as outsiders within the favorites tribe and potentially setting up a better post-merge situation for themselves. So I really think they're, if this tribe were to ever lose immunity, which I unfortunately don't think is going to happen, that this could really be an interesting situation going down here. And I wasn't sure actually so much what to make of. Like, I was really interested in seeing how this played out.
Yeah, the reason I bring up the Jonas bit at the beginning is that this all guys thing that seems to have been at least entertained by Red Hot and Eddie, because they seem to make their first pitch to Eric and then I guess to Malcolm, who was there as well. I think this is something which could realistically happen, and so the fact that they show this right away, like, it doesn't do anything to dispel that at least.
Right. If I'm in Malcolm's position, I'm trying to get both Reynolds and Eddie there to the post merge situation where my physical prowess is going to become an issue for me, and at least as long as they're there, I have people who are on the other side, known quantities as fans that are doing whatever, doing their own thing, great in challenges, and I can point to them and say, hey, wait, you know, these are the people we need to be concerned about.
Right. It's interesting as well that we see both Malcolm and Eric being lumped in there, because we've never really had a sense of how close the two of them are. They said pre-game that they wanted to align with each other, and you know, that wasn't borne out by the events of the first episode with Francesca leaving and the two of them being on opposite sides of that. But it seems like they're getting along pretty well, and I could easily imagine Malcolm doing his best to, like, keep Eric in the mindset that he's perfectly secure with Malcolm, and, like, that being his duty to keep Eric under control.
Yeah, see, Eric has always struck me as a player, watching him play through his first time, and now nothing has changed my mind since, where he's not an active player whatsoever. He is hanging back, doing his best in the challenges, and hoping people basically tell him where to vote. And I think Malcolm recognizes basically the same kind of thing in him and sees in Eric someone who, you know, Malcolm, great socially. Eric's going to be the exact kind of guy that Malcolm, I think, is going to be used to kind of forcing a relationship with just from his own. I'm sure, you know, he goes to his friend's house and that friend has other friends. And, oh, hey, we just met. And now 10 minutes later, Malcolm, they're in love with Malcolm. And I think that's roughly what happens with Eric here.
Right, yeah. And Eric seemingly doesn't really have anywhere else to turn, so I can easily see him, like, being drawn to Malcolm, especially if, like, he's not as tight with the other outsiders now that Brandon's gone. Like, we don't see anything from Eric or Brenda, because, I mean, but we don't see anything from either of them individually, so seeing a scene of them together is, like, the holy grail at this point. But we're never given anything to suggest that the two of them are close, so who else is Eric going to be drawn to? Presumably the one person who's most likely to be sociable with him, who would be Malcolm.
Right, and actually, you know, along the same lines of keeping Reynolds and Eddie, and Eric's another great person when Malcolm's physical strength becomes a problem, Eric is someone who he can point to as a competitor.
Right, so all of this is entirely abstract at the moment, but as we're going to cover later, there are scenarios which could happen which would make Malcolm want to switch things up a lot, and if that happens, I think Reynolds, Eddie, and Eric are three natural people for him to go to.
Oh, totally. And like we saw, actually, although the fact that this happened on Next Time on Survivor means that it's probably never going to happen, but Malcolm seems ready to make a move, which I'm very excited to hear about.
I could easily see Gota being like Tandang 2.0, where we constantly get all of these ideas are constantly furthered, but because nobody ever has a chance to act on them, we never get to see how they could play out. So all of this tension builds up until presumably post-merge, where, you know, they finally get a chance to see what they can do.
See, I think all of the dynamics on Gota and it being kind of in flux, plus all of the dynamics on Bacall, where the Corinne and Philip are after each other, they're going to lose all these challenges. I think this could mean very good things for two people I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about, those being Malcolm and Cochran, who I think are kind of in the middle. Everyone likes them. They're laid back. They're not viewed as over-aggressive or anything. And I think they're really all of these dynamics are shaping up for the kind of in-between, calm, rational players to have a chance to really do some damage post-merge. Yeah. So actually, the next thing I want to talk about with this new Gota tribe is the scene between Malcolm and Andrea in the woods, I think, where this is the scene where Andrea tells him that she had a dream that he has an idol. And, you know, they're talking about Reynolds' idol, and Malcolm's ears perk up and his eyes start shifting everywhere. I thought it was very cool. And Malcolm actually played this off quite well in the form of just lying straight to her face and then gave a great confessional about how he's an experienced and accomplished liar with women.
Yeah, when he said that, you could hear, like, this chorus of preteen girls falling even deeper in love with him.
Right. As Jay Fisher pointed out on Twitter, Malcolm gives a confessional about how he's an accomplished liar with women, and every woman on Twitter just goes, "Oh, Malcolm, have sex with me!"
Yeah. This reminds me of the final immunity challenge from last season, where just after that, Malcolm was recapping, saying, you know, my hands got really shaky, just like when I'm talking to a girl. And I'm thinking, that's bullshit, Malcolm. That never happens to you. But now, I kind of think that this is like a long con where Malcolm gives his impression of being all nervous and everything, and he knows that that's something that girls will latch onto.
Right. Right, yeah. Malcolm, oh, I get all nervous talking to girls. Good news, dude. Just shut your mouth. You're going to fall over. Okay, so actually, Andrea is someone I want to talk about a little more, because Andrea is... There were some high expectations placed on Andrea preseason, and I was one of the people placing them there where, and again, it was partially because I thought she and Francesca and Cochran were going to have it all figured out, and it was going to be cake and wine and cheese, and she was going to never have to worry and make it float to the merge and then be not intimidating there. Andrea, to me, and I think this is, you know, this has been theorized a lot when we saw the opening episode that everyone who played with Boston Rob has like Boston Rob PTSD. I think Andrea has, at least the behavior I've seen so far, signifies to me that she is so paranoid of getting kind of boxed out of the game, like having everyone fall into an alliance without her and leaving or falling just blindly into place, and she does not want to let that happen again. That as like every interaction, almost every at least, that I've seen her had seemed almost borderline desperate to me.
Yeah, because pre-show we thought that she'd just be cursing effortlessly, at least until the merge, and presumably far beyond that as well. But now it seems like she's just careering from place to place and kind of staying on the course, but not through any kind of deliberate plan, but just out of sheer luck. And I'm just not sure what her long-term future is at this point. Like, okay, maybe she'll get back to the merge, hook back up with Philip and Cochran and Don, but I just have trouble seeing where she slots into that. Especially since all of those other people that were in her alliance before are now on the new Bacall tribe together without her getting closer to each other. The only person she's with here is Malcolm, who she seems to get along with okay from what we saw this episode, but like relying just on Malcolm, who, as we've seen, is perfectly able to pick up people to replace Andrew if he needs to. That's just not a good plan for her.
So do you think this is now justified fear that something, some weirdness is going to go down on Gota if they go to tribal council and she's not going to be a part of it?
Well, she seems to be content with just sticking with the favorites versus fans dynamic and just booting one of the fans. And I imagine she's assuming that when it gets back to the merge, it's going to be, you know, South of Us reunion and everything's going to go fine from there, which I imagine it could, but it could easily, like, I could easily see her during that time that she's away from the majority being downgraded from third or fourth in that group to the bottom and not realizing that until it's far too late for her to do anything about it.
Yeah, see, I think one thing that we haven't factored in yet is right when they get to that beach, all of the fans are blowing up each other's spots. You know, they're trying to get the other ones voted out. And Andrea's going to recognize, hey, Brenda and Eric here probably know that they were on the outs, too, back at our camp. And this, if all of this information comes together and these people are so inclined, they're probably not going to take out Malcolm. It could quite easily end up back on Andrea.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you spoke about how Andrew might have Boston Rob PTSD, as you call it. What do you think about Eric? Because I heard this today that Eric might be so scarred by the manner of his eviction in Micronesia that when Reynolds and Eddie come to him, and yeah, they might be kind of shifty, and you wouldn't expect them to be the kind of guys who are on the outs, but Eric just doesn't seem to even entertain the idea. He's so immediately skeptical of any kind of theory that's proposed to him that he ends up maybe costing himself potential allies here.
Eric, to me, has been way too passive this whole game. It started, honestly, in the first episode when Philip approached him to be in Stealth R Us, and he was like, I'm not so interested necessarily, but I'll listen, but I'm not down. Eric, because again, like his first time playing, he just seemed to really float by and try to win challenges and hope it wasn't his name coming up. And the one time he listened to people and tried to make an active move to advance his position in the game, it was one of the most historically like massive blindsides and blunders in the history of Survivor. And I don't think he trusts himself to make good game decisions. It might even go to that extent where he's like, I think we saw something. I'm spacing now on his exact mentality on his pregame thing, but he had a quote that really alarmed me in one of his pregame interviews where he was really about really just not even being there to play to win, just being there to go far and not messing it up. And I think that's going to be by far his biggest problem this entire season, and I don't think anything about that has changed as far as I can tell. Yeah. All right. So actually, you know, I think it's at least worth noting, very quickly, Dom, it's at least worth noting, when the fans come in and they're in this much peril and they're all, you know, flipping on each other and trying to sell each other out, this is when we were talking about why you boot Eddie over Laura and giving them a hard time for that. This is the ramifications of that decision that we're seeing coming into play right here. It doubles your odds of swapping poorly, and now you have two people in your, if you're Sherry, who are both willing to vote you out and have no loyalty. Whereas if it's Laura, it's just one person, and then post merge, if you are all still there anyway, they're on the other tribe.
Yeah, well, even more than that, going back to what we said last week, if there is a pair of favorites looking for some new allies, like let's say Malcolm's trying to get a new group together, or Eric and Brenda are looking for some new people to team up with. If Laura's there instead of, say, Eddie, then, you know, suddenly the two people that are most natural for them to go to are Sherry and Laura instead of Reynold and Eddie. And if you want to go even further back, if Hope's there instead of Reynold, then it looks even better for the fans now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just I very much wanted, at least when we were talking about that, we're now seeing the consequences of that come into play, and I think it could be drastic for the fans.
Right. It may be that it doesn't end up mattering, that it's going to be 4 vs 3 as seems to be suggested on the show, and the fans just get knocked off one by one. But, you know, you can't be results oriented about that. It's very possible that this could have ended up differently, and that if it did end up going differently, that you would have wanted Laura and or Hope there instead.
Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking about Gota now? I don't think they're going to lose the next challenge, mostly because I think not only is Bacall pathetic and would lose the next challenge anyway, I am hoping, I got faith in our boy Cochran to throw this next challenge. And so I'm thinking Gota is going to be good until the merge. What are you thinking about how this could, all of these relationships that are going to form now on Gota, where are you seeing this going?
Okay, well, I will preface this by saying I'm sure that Cochran will have some explanation after why he quote-unquote threw the challenge, no matter whether he in fact did or not, but in any case, I'm not sure. Like, as I said, if you're thinking about a potential merge, it might come at Final 12, Final 11. There are only maybe one or two more tribal councils before that, and like you said, Gota seems to be pretty dominant in these challenges, so I'm not sure we're going to get to see them go to tribal council anytime soon before the point where the whole game gets reset once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Do you think that there could be any long-lasting relationships that get formed here? Like, I think Malcolm is basically free-rolling, like, some potential post-merge allies here.
Yeah, right now, I think Malcolm is, he's working to get friendly with people just in case he needs them post-merge, but I don't think he's actively, like, trying to build an empire yet. I think the most likely scenario where things get switched up on Gota is actually in response to events on Bacall, because if this Corinne boot, which Philip keeps wanting to shoot, what ends up happening, I think Malcolm's going to realize that his spot has just been blown up, and he's going to work to get something new together. And as you said, this is going to involve probably ditching Andrew and going for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And I think Malcolm is exactly the kind of player who could 100% pull off something like that. I think he is totally maintaining great relationships with everyone he's encountered this game, and I think he's absolutely crushed. He's hit every right note for me so far.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's played a very solid, if unremarkable, game. And when I say unremarkable, I'm not saying that it's, like, mediocre or anything. I'm just saying there's nothing that sticks out as one, like, big move that he's had to make. It's just been him laying back, developing good relationships with people, performing well in challenges, just all the fundamentals he's got nailed down.
Right, exactly. And I am anticipating seeing that pattern continue for sure. And I still have Malcolm, I think, at number one in my overall equity. I think he's just absolutely crushing, especially with that idol there. And again, I think he's going to have, once we look post-merge, and assuming, again, Gota's there, and I don't think even if they lost, he'd be there regardless. I think that idol could be huge for him here in orchestrating a flip. He's maybe got the votes with people, maybe on Shep, maybe on Corinne, whatever's happening, where that idol could potentially lead to Malcolm getting to pick who goes in a very critical round.
And also, it's worth remembering that if he ends up teaming up with Reynold and Eddie, then there's another idol in play there as well. So potentially, he could be coming to the merge at the head of a group which has two idols and at least one very smart strategic player.
Right, and I think Reynold could if he feels cool with Malcolm and wants to lock Malcolm in as like a future ally, and this is really risky, but I could see him telling Malcolm about the idol.
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I think Reynold has been burned by his experiences so far, and is probably reluctant to trust anybody. But if anyone can make Reynold open up to them, it's probably Malcolm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. What else do we have for Gota right now?
I'm curious what you think of Eric and Brenda's position so far. Like, the show hasn't given us much to work with, as always, but they both had secret scenes this week, which were quite revealing, and they could end up, I mean, they each have one vote, they could end up being very important down the line.
Okay, the thing for me is, when considering Eric, like I've said, I've described a couple times now how I feel like Eric's playing this game where he's not going to be thinking about the active forward-thinking moves. He's just kind of hoping he gets through the next round. And I've said before about Brenda, I'll say again, she is the most baselessly overhyped strategic mind I've ever seen in my life. She's not, like, she knows exactly what happened at the Fans Camp pre-merge. And maybe it's because, obviously, the number one rule of editing this season of Survivor is don't show Brenda. So maybe she is working really well at developing these relationships with the fans. I don't think so. I think we would have seen at least a hint of that if anything were to come of it.
I agree that she's overhyped, but is she just overhyped to say Matt or Hope by certain sections of the fan community?
Yeah, you know, the overhyped train on Hope may have come in full speed ahead this preseason and didn't pan out. But at the same time, Brenda is, it strikes me that we just haven't seen anything out of her. Like, she could be, I think she's going to be there at the merge. I think she's going to have room to play at the merge. And so far, I have no reason to believe she's going to do anything with it.
Yeah, it's weird. I think she is making a conscious effort to play under the radar, and, you know, I think that is part of why we haven't seen as much from her. Like, in Nicaragua, she was playing this aggressive, straight, like, aggressive, forward, dominant game, and so they couldn't really not show her, and, you know, given that she was playing like that, it was something which was much easier to make into compelling TV. Now she's just trying to lay back, because I think she's aware of this perception of her, and she wants to do as much as she can to dampen it. But obviously, that's not something which can easily be edited into this, like, nice, compelling soundbite for the audience. So I think that's part of it. But watching their secret scenes this week, like, both of them seem, like, very happy to sit with the favourites. There's this weird sense of inertia there. And with Eric, I think it's more understandable because, as I said, I think Malcolm has been, like, this is speculation, but I think Malcolm, at least, has been doing a lot to try and, like, be buddy-buddy with Eric and keep him under wraps. But Brenda, though, like, she acknowledges that one of the reasons the spot was good for her is because she felt she was on the bottom and now she has new people to play with. But then later in the same confessional, she says that this is great because, you know, we have four favorites on our tribe and we can vote out a fan. Now, surely, if you thought you were at the bottom of the favorites before, why are you wanting to vote out a fan here? Like, it just makes no sense.
I don't know, Dom, unless you don't know actually that well what you're doing within the game of Survivor.
I never said she did. Anyway, okay, going back to Eric for a minute, I can understand his reluctance to buy into what Reddin and Eld are trying to sell him here, because, like, they do come across, as he said, as, like, kind of shifty used car salesman. But given that he knew 100% he was at the bottom before, there is at least a chance that Reddin and Eld are being sincere, and a good chance, maybe, if you think through it logically. So I don't understand his kind of deep-seated opposition to considering allying with them.
Right, the thing is, if you're Brenda or Eric here, you know that if this plays down to Stealth R Us and you, that's probably not going to end that well for you. So the only thing better than that is anything, and now you have this opportunity to make something happen and get these people on your side, and hopefully, you know, this other tribe's going to Tribal Council. Hopefully there's some wacky people over there. Maybe some conflict is going to arise like we've seen out of Corinne and Philip. And you're counting on being there at the merge with room to play, and you're doing nothing to take advantage of that room, and it's staggering to me, especially out of returning players. But again, these just don't seem like the types to me to really do anything about that. Like, I think if Malcolm had somehow been on the outs with Stealth R Us, that we'd be seeing an entirely different story. But again, I think that's why Malcolm was never on the outs with Stealth R Us, and these two were.
I mean, do you think they generally think they are on the outs though?
Yeah, I think so. I think they have to know that they are on the outs within the favorites tribe, where when Philip came over to give Brenda her Stealth RS nickname, her response is, "Oh, really? Like, someone as low down on the totem pole as me gets one?"
Yeah, so it does seem to be more of like a lack of willingness to try and make something happen rather than a lack of awareness that they need to make something happen.
I think there's a really, really terrible condition in Survivor players where they go, okay, well, we just mixed up. The mix was good for me, certainly. And now phase two is make the merge. But when you come into that, when the swap saved you, do something about it. Don't just go blindly into the merge back into the position that you were already screwed in.
I think, if anything, good at winning all of these challenges possibly is going to hurt Eric and Brenda the most, because, like, they didn't have a chance to have other people, like, have a, to give a concrete display of loyalty to them. Because they might just be able to coast to the merge from here, not realizing that they're in a bad position, and so when they get to the merge, they might just think, well, yeah, we can reunite with the favorites and play it from there, not, like, and it might not occur to them that something actually needs to change here.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm hoping that the reason this is happening is because Malcolm is there saying, listen, guys, if we have to go to Tribal Council, we'll pick off the fans. When we get back together post-merge with all these favorites, Philip Shepard's crazy. Don's going to win any jury. I'm going with you guys, and we're going to mix things up when it gets down to the favorites. And Malcolm's then going to have room to play if and when if it gets down to the favorites and when it does in that timeline.
Yeah, and that would be great gameplay on Malcolm's part. And yeah, as a fan of the game, it would be a good thing to see, and we would hope he gets rewarded for it. But as a viewer who's desperate for something to get shaken up, it's really not what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what else? Anything else about Gota for now?
I think the last thing about Gota is, if you're in Reynolds and Eddie's position, or any of the fans really, but I ask it for them because it's most relevant for them, when you saw Brandon's blow up at the last challenge, and we forgot to touch on this last week, do you think you should be able to deduce from that that Eric's on the outside? Because, like, you see this blow up between, okay, you see this fight between Brandon and Philip, so you know that they're obviously not going to be in the same alliance, most likely. So, and given that you know that Francesca was booted first, it was probably going to come down to either Francesca or Philip that first go round. So you know that Philip is going to be in some kind of majority alliance there, and that Brandon therefore isn't. So when you see Brandon bidding goodbye to Eric on his way out specifically, and nobody else, does that signal to you that Eric's going to be on the outs as well?
Oh yeah, and you're absolutely right. Yes, that crossed my mind last week as well. Where when Brandon's leaving, the only he says like "I love you, man" or something to Eric. Where especially just because he only said it to Eric, it would imply not only that Eric's on the outs, but only Eric is on the outs, and that Brenda might then be on the ins.
Yeah, but that's interesting, because if you're the fan to, I guess, this extent to show as well, what are you going to make of, like, Brenda or Andrew being on your tribe here? Because the difficulty is, if you try playing too hard too fast, then if the favorites are united, they're going to identify you as someone who needs to be cut loose as soon as possible. But if you fail to, if you play too passively, then you might miss up on, you might miss a crucial opportunity to get people on your side and potentially switch a game up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think most of it for me, if I'm ready, Reynolds or Eddie here, is I'm presuming Eric's on the outs. I'm hoping I find out more. As far as Brenda goes, I'm waiting to see how she approaches me. Like, if she's, I feel like she's going to tell you one way or the other.
Yeah, because it seems like Brenda, this new Brenda, is someone who's just very chill, very laid back. But if I was meeting her for the first time, knowing that she was on the papers before, I might think, well, she came into this game with a very dangerous reputation, and so, yeah, it's possible that she's, trying to reinvent herself and is throwing them all over, but at the same time, it may be that put a tug on her back the very first day, and she's just been scrambling for her life since then.
See, I would probably try not to be going, I definitely would be thinking about the dynamics on the favorites tribe, but I would also, at the same time, be saying to myself, this is conceivable, but by no means is this solid enough proof for me to make any big game moves on.
Okay, and with Andrea, I would expect, she's someone who isn't going to make any waves, it seems like, and so I would expect her, especially given her prior relationships, which, if I am a fan of the show, which maybe can't be said for some of these people, then that's something that I should know about. So I would expect Andrea to be solid, probably not someone who's liable to flip.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally. Andrea, I think, would definitely be one of the, if history is any indication, she's going to stay blindly loyal for far too long.
Yeah, and Malcolm is someone who I mean, for the first time, he's very likable, very sociable, but if I like him in one of my side, then that means all the favorites probably did as well. So he's probably in a good position over there, doesn't really have a reason to tell on them just yet. So if you're trying to find a way in, do you start with Eric and go from there?
I think I do. I think, yeah, just based on everything I've seen so far and based on how Eric tends to play, yeah.
Okay, and just based on what we've seen of Eric's personality as well, I could easily see him being someone who, tried to take a very passive, laid-back approach in the beginning, and given that, these are 10 favorites who are all, here to win this time, I could easily see a lot of gameplay going on and him just being, passed by in the process.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he doesn't want to get swept up on it all, and that ends up in him being saved, but by the end of it, he's not in the middle there.
Right, yeah, see, Eric's the type who, in most seasons that he plays, he's going to be around a while, and he probably will get to the mid, maybe towards the end game, but he's not going to be the one calling any kind of shots at any point, and he's going to have to win his way to the finals, probably, because he won't have made anyone mad. People tend to like him, I think, and, you know, he's presumably done well in challenges, and he's a nice kid that I would, you know, all things being equal, Eric's someone I'd be fine with voting, you know, voting for. I guess that's kind of a stupid point, but whatever. So the last thing I want to hit on, I think, about this new Gota tribe is something that we kind of mentioned in passing, mostly joking last week, which is that these guys are going to smash Bakal at all of these challenges. And in this week's immunity challenge, when we get there, Story ended up checking out, where, you know, Probst was saying Bakal was so bad they looked like they were on medication, and that they, at the end, he was like, you know, just pathetic, I think he said about Bakal. And actually, there were a couple of times this week where I thought Probst was a little bit out of line.
Like what?
Like when Corinne at the swap stumbled over a word and he was like, were you going to say injustice?
I thought that was kind of funny.
It was funny, but it's, hey, relax, dude. I wasn't going to try to put a word into her mouth that would be, if that was in fact what she was trying to say, such a big thing to say there.
Right, but you know that Corinne is someone who's so tightly strung and who chooses her words very carefully that when she makes a sentence like that, it is interesting. You want to delve deeper into it. Because it is revealing in a way that someone like your girl Kat saying something stupid wouldn't be.
I guess I understand the impulse. I just feel like his job is not to blow up people's spots. Like, if Corinne stumbles over a word and fixes it, let her fix it.
I think Corinne would have blown up her own spot there, if anything, if that's what you're saying it would have led to.
I feel like Corinne's the type where if she wants to say something nasty to people, she has no problem doing so. So you don't need to try to get her to do so or try to call her on doing so if she clearly didn't.
Yeah, we kind of see that at the Tribal Council later, actually, where Corinne's like, well, yeah, if I was doing this over again, there'd be three people here I would easily swap out for like all these new friends I'm making. It's just, you know, for her to be so like upfront about that it's not surprising. It's Corinne, after all, but it's not obviously not a smart thing to say.
So, speaking of Corinne, very quickly want to get into the Bakal tribe. I think it's worth going over, at least the challenge was won. Gota ended up smashing them, as mentioned, where this was the, you go and get giant cubes, and then there's a staircase puzzle, and this one wasn't even close. And so Bakal's going to now have to end up going to Tribal Council. Do you have anything about the challenge you want to add before we get into this?
Yeah, I'm assuming that there were, like, multiple permutations of how the blocks would be arranged, because otherwise it seems like it's a pretty simple challenge, right? You just look for where the lettering lines up and just structure it like that. So I'm assuming that, like, let's say you have the F, A, and the V on one side, that maybe there are some other letters on another side, or that side's duplicated somewhere else and it only matches if it's done one way or something.
I don't think there are multiple correct fitting pieces where you have to get them. I think there are a lot of decoy paint-ons where if you make your base based on this one, you can't find the right permutation, so you need to find the right one to base it off of first.
Yeah, that would make sense, because I remember at the end Cochran saying, like, this piece that was at the top needs to be right at the bottom, and you think, well, if it's as simple as it seems to be on paper, then surely you would never even make that mistake. So there must be something to it that we're not seeing.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they were trying to spell it upside down or whatever. It's very, you know, fans and favorites start with the same first two letters.
I mean, you put favorite in charge, this kind of thing happens.
And at that point, it's like, why? I don't even know why at that point they were even bothering wasting the energy moving the blocks around. It was already done. But still.
I guess so. Right, they want to at least give the impression of trying. But, yeah, Gota just seems like they're going to clinically annihilate them in every single challenge. If you look at the preview for next week, actually, and I guess mute this quickly if you don't want to hear what the challenge is, it's the one that we highlighted a few weeks ago where they have to just race around this course and the first team to, like, catch up to the other one wins. And you see Gota just striding around confidently, and Bakal looks like they're slaves driving a chariot or something. They're just despondent.
Yeah, this was a solid call by you, by the way, when recommending what challenges to do. This is exactly the one you named.
All right, what can I say? Nostradamus right here.
Yeah, Nostradamus. Yeah, that was good stuff.
I don't get it. But anyway, moving on to better things. So what do we have to say about this new Bakal tribe? I don't think there's that much, actually, compared to Gota, which is depressing and not all that surprising.
Right, yeah. See, the problem is the favorites are probably going to just have to automatically stick together here. If they're playing correct, if they know what's happening, and this is exactly what we end up seeing happen, where despite all of this talk about flipping and whatever, it seems like there was no situation where the favorites weren't going to vote one of the fans out.
Yeah, you would think so, because Philip, Dawn, and Cochran basically have no reason to depart from each other at this point, so you think maybe Corinne is in the position of power, being the swing vote, but if there's something which would cause her to want to jump over, it probably comes after the time at which she's able to do that, right? So at the first Tribal Council, she has to choose a side. If she goes with the favourites, which, I mean, it seems like she's going to do the vast majority of the time, and boots one of the fans, then even if something happens between her and Philip later, the best she can do is she flips his forces high. So, you know, it's as interesting as it might be theoretically, in practice it's not likely to ever be more complex than it seems.
Right, and plus Corinne's smart enough to know that if she flips over here and takes out Philip, for instance, or whatever, and maybe if she takes out Philip, all the fans post-merge are like, or all the favorites post-merge are like, oh, fucking finally we got rid of this Us thing and we can all sit and play now. But I think it's more likely they go, well, hang on a minute, these guys were all, you know, Corinne was on board with them, and she just turned and went with the fans. I think in doing so, she is, like, way too likely running the risk of just torching her entire game to spite Philip, basically.
Yeah, I think for that to happen, Dawn and Cochran would have to be on board with it, so it doesn't look like it's just Corinne flipping. But Dawn and Cochran are smart enough to know that Philip is a reliable voter at this point, so for all of his other faults and for all the dangers associated with him, there's just no point cutting him loose.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he's another good guy to have there post-merge. He's always going to be putting a target on himself.
Yeah, and it seems like he is, we don't know how close he is with Dawn, but it seems like he's reasonably close with Cochran, and I imagine Cochran is one of the people, like, pushing most ardently for him to stay.
Oh, yeah, and I think they all, because this is, sorry, when you're dealing with Philip Shepherd, what you're dealing with is a debatably crazy person, but what you're dealing with, as far as the game goes, predictability. You know? Like Philip,
yeah.
Especially when he's taken such great time and energy and apparently such great pride in recreating the Stealth R Us thing, I don't think he wants that going anywhere, and I would bank on that being his only game plan. And when you know someone's only game plan, that is really easy to play against.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible that Dawn, yeah, if you asked her in private, she would quite happily admit that, you know, if she could have a choice, she would want one of the fans there instead of Philip, just on a personal level. But she's the type of person who wouldn't push for that as strongly as some of her tribe mates, I don't think. So she's just going to accept whatever decision's being made.
So, you know, staying on Philip for a little bit and his whole fascination with Stealth R Us, he's not even trying to keep this a secret from the people who, by all accounts, are probably his only competition if Stealth R Us is in fact happening, where he goes up to Julia and is like, listen, Stealth R Us is up and running, it's back, the organization is together, and he's telling her all of the details, like there are six people in it, and not even holding anything back. And, someone else is at the forefront with me. Security plans in case one of us accidentally got booted. What did you think about this whole approach from Philip?
Yeah, Philip accomplished the unlikely feat of both spewing info everywhere unnecessarily and being frustratingly vague in the space of one episode. Because when he's talking with Matt and Michael and then separately with Julia, he's, like you said, he's being very cagey, not wanting to give anything away. But at the same time, in the process, he does. Like, he says, there are two of us at the core of Stealth R Us. There are two of us at the core of Stealth R Us. There are six other members. Like, he's making it very clear to them that they are at best, like, seventh or eighth wheels. So, like, obviously, Philip, he's trying to do his best. He's doing Philip things by, you know, not doing them very well. The most interesting part of that, I thought, was him saying that there are two of us at the core of Stealth R Us. Because obviously one of them is himself, but who do you think the other one is? Like, is it Andrea? Because I think that would be the most natural person, given that, you know, they have this history and they're still very close. But I'm tempted to say that it might be, like, Cochran instead.
In thinking about this, and in thinking back to when Philip was initially pitching Stealth R Us to everyone, where he's like, when he was talking to Eric, and he's like, and I am just the messenger. Don't go running around because I'm just being, you know, I'm doing what I've been told. I don't think there is a solid number two that he actually considers the number two person. But in saying that, he's opening it up for, he can tell whoever he wants now to go and give these people this information that he's saying might come from the second head of Stealth R Us. And that could be anyone. They don't know who to be looking for the information from.
That's intriguing. That would require a level of planning, which I'm not sure Philip is capable of.
Well, I don't think there is a clear number two. I can't imagine he thinks it would be Dawn, or Cochran, excuse me, because I feel like Cochran is so clearly tied with Dawn.
Yeah, but I think the Cochran of anyone is the one most likely to, like, play into Philip's act. Whereas, okay. like, Andrew, I think, will nod along and smile sweetly and indulge Philip, but Cochran is the one who's really going to, like, feed Philip's ego while he's doing it.
My favorite moment of this entire episode came when Philip was talking to Matt and Michael, where he gave that pitch where he goes, like, where he's talking about, you know, Stealth R Us is back in action, and he's like, the ultimate test of loyalty for your membership in Stealth R Us is, at some point today, someone is going to tell you to do something different than what I just told you. Do it, unless I say anything differently, which doesn't make sense. You'd think someone would want... But the best part for me is Matt looks right at him and just goes, understood. Yeah. And then 2 seconds later, Michael and Matt are both like, actually, could you explain that? But the initial impulse, which I'm sure we'll be talking about Matt, like, I think that is the perfect answer. Like, Philip, whatever stupid bullshit you're saying, I'm totally on board. I am an agent within Stealth R Us, and it is mission understood.
Okay, I can tell that you're just waiting for your chance to fillet Matt one last time, so let's get into that now so that we don't have to cut everything else with it.
Okay, I see Matt to me, obviously Matt, the big comparison I made was to Chris Doherty, and now, of course Matt swapped horribly and got punished for it. I still I think that is the exact Chris Doherty, understood, is the exact Chris Doherty answer there.
Okay, so leaving aside the fact that he differs greatly from him in both personality and final placement, I'm just not seeing the basis for the comparison here. Like, anyone with an ounce of common sense would say exactly the same thing if being approached by Philip there.
I just mean that in the sense that Chris, to me, has always stood out as the one person who his entire motivation was, and when we talked to him, nothing changed. It only served to reaffirm this, is when he's giving an answer to anything, the answer he's giving is, what does this person most want to hear? And I feel like Matt was exactly the same way. Every scene he was in.
I feel like someone with the finesse that you seem to be implying that he has wouldn't have got booted this episode.
I think he got booted because they were confident he didn't have the idol because he was wearing his heart on his sleeve.
Right, but is that the impression that you want to give? Like, if you know that the majority of the audience is going to be scared of an idol, confirming for them that you do not have an idol seems to be unwise, to say the least.
No, and you're absolutely right. I think his impulse was, I want them to trust me. And I'm going to be honest, and I want them to feel like my cards are always all the way out on the table. And in practice, this ended up burning him, and that's exactly why he got voted out. Like, certainly, in theory, I would be strongly suggesting that I do have an idol.
Right, and I'm not saying that he made any, like, big mistake or anything. I think he had good instincts, and, like, I don't think there's some flaw in his game that you can point to and say, this is why he left, because everyone seemed to generally like him. But I'm saying I don't see any, like, great display of skill here.
Okay, I feel like we did not I don't think we got to see an adequate representation of what Matt could do in a season, first of all, where he's playing against first-time players. I think he crushes most seasons where no one else has experience, and they're not all, or at least not all of them, in a standard season now where 18 out of the 20 people aren't familiar whatsoever with Survivor. And I feel like, again, this was the classic example of, like, Silas, like Aaron, like whoever, just got killed by a SWAT. They got punished for being good.
We got to see him make decisions in a venue where the fact that there were returning players on the other tribe didn't matter. And the one big call he had to make there, he arguably made a hatch of it. So
okay.
I would strongly dispute the claim that he would crush, like, a random season. But in any case, I think the more interesting member of that partnership, especially now that Matt's gone, is your boy Michael Snow, who had a better episode than usual, given that he actually appeared in this one. And his position going forward is pretty complex, I think. So what do you have to say about Michael Snow?
Love the gaze.
Beyond that.
As you mentioned, I am a huge, huge fan of Michael Snow, where I think if the big factor for me, obviously, is I'm expecting Bacall to go back to Tribal Council. We've seen Cochran identify him. I don't know if it was in a secret scene or on the actual show where he said, you know, I looked at Michael and I thought he would be the mastermind behind this entire fans tribe, like this genius. And I think now that they know Michael doesn't have an idol, that could mean really, really bad things for Michael this next episode. But I think if Michael gets through this, he could be for sure the power player among all of the fans. Once it gets down to the favorites they've picked off enough fans, they want to start picking each other off. I think Michael, out of all of the fans, is the only one I could see at this point actually making a run at this.
Yeah, but see, then he'd be like the obvious leader of an outnumbered minority. Like, I could see him being the Jonas of the season, for instance.
Okay, I don't mean right at the swap where he's trying to make things change. I mean once a couple people start going and the favorites naturally themselves want to make things change, he is not going to mess up that. I have faith that he will not mess that up if he gets that opportunity.
Okay, I mean, he was complicit in the arguable mistake that Matt made as well in keeping Red and Eddie around instead of the women. So, I don't know. And also, there was one scene in this episode which made me a bit less confident in his chances where when they were going up to Philip for the first time and he said, oh, I got the point here, let's see. Is it plead our case to Philip time now? Where it's like, if Philip were more self-aware than he is, or by which I mean if Philip was self-aware at all, he would pick up on that and realise that anything that Michael was saying to him was like just a way of placating Philip rather than like sincere agreement.
See, yeah, that struck me as Michael saying, look, Philip, we both recognize the situation at hand, and almost like a form of not outright kissing the ring, but acknowledging, like, Philip, you are the one who's making this decision, effectively. And, of course, anyone in my position would do what I'm about to do right now, which is hopefully tell you why I'm not going to be the one who goes tonight.
Okay.
I thought that was totally standard. I didn't take anything from that.
Yeah, but one place where I do agree with you, though, is I do think his position looks pretty bleak, going forward. Like, if you want to elaborate on the reasons why, I think we're broadly on the same page, but maybe you're coming from a different place.
Now, the Bacala tribe is in such a position that I fantasized about my entire life. They are going to go into this next challenge. Not that it's going to take much throwing. This is a 100% throw if you are Bacala and a 100% get rid of Michael Snow. Unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it. Like, that's why I'm thinking his position is so bleak, because we've seen Cochran identify him as the thinking player. Philip doesn't even know Julia's name. She doesn't appear to be remotely threatening post-merge. I think if these people are playing what I would deem to be optimal survivor, unless we get like a merge next week or a reswap or whatever, Bacall should 100% be throwing this and it should be the end of the line here for Michael Snow. And I'm really hoping that that is not the case, but I think that is highly likely to be the case.
Yeah, I think he's already cut down his options by, again, going with the guys instead of the girls. And now that he's here post-swap, he's in a very awkward position because not only has his closest ally just been voted out, but all the other people who he could have been allied with are now on the other tribe. Because, you know, Shoei's there now. There was a slight chance, I guess, of aligning with Eddie and Reynolds, which is why you make that move in the first place. But that's completely gone now that if they are looking for new people, they're going to find them in the form of, you know, Eric or Malcolm or Andrew or whoever else. And any favorites who might be open to flipping, which I guess is now down to, like, Eric and Brent or maybe Malcolm, they're now all on the other tribe as well. So it's, like, Michael, even if he does make it to the merge, is going to be left with pretty much no one he's close to other than maybe Judith, if she's still there, or maybe Corinne.
And honestly, if I'm in Michael's position there, fine with me, totally fine, where as long as I'm just there and I have at least, like, a shot where there's no combination. There could have never been a combination, I don't think, where going from swap to merge, Michael then enters the merge as, like, this big favorite. And honestly, if I'm Michael, I want to be there with as few fans as possible at this point. I just want it to be me as a potential free agent for when these favorites inevitably want to turn on each other.
Yeah, I guess, like, if the other fans that are there are Reynolds and Eddie, then when that cannibalization starts, you can count on being there long after they are. Because you know, there might be, like, this temporary truce where they just want to get rid of the biggest non-favorite threats, and if they do that, then it's not going to be you. It's going to be, you know, if Eddie doesn't win a challenge, he's gone. If Reynolds doesn't win a challenge, he's gone.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. That's why I'm saying, I think if Michael can make it out of this round intact, I'm going to be in love with his spot for what it could have been entering a merge. I don't know how likely he is to get out of this round intact.
Fair enough. And we say this round, there could be at least two rounds to go before he even has a merge in sight.
Oh, yeah. I'm just hoping for a merge at 12 because I think this would be really boring if they didn't.
We always like it when the merge has more people in it in general, and I think this is no exception.
I think I'm optimistic we're getting set up for a merge at 12. Now, Dom, something that just crossed my mind is, as mentioned, we're going to see that run around in a circle carrying weights and whatever, and, you know, Phillip's falling over in the preview and whatever. I don't think that's going to be the immunity challenge, because that's a lock for Gota if that's the immunity challenge. Not that there would be much suspense in many challenges. I'm guessing that's the reward challenge, and just because it seems like we're seeing Bacall get killed in the preview, might it be like a mental immunity challenge and Bacall wins immunity and we actually get to see something out of Gota, some moves?
It's possible, and I certainly hope so. They've inadvertently spoiled things in the preview before, but I don't think they would make it this blatant if this was the immunity challenge.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Because it's pretty clear from the picture that Bacall's not going to win that one, whatever it is.
Yeah, and again, the thing I most want to see is something out of Cochran next week where he says, entering this immunity challenge, I'm doing everything I can to go back to Tribal Council. Going to another vote is a privilege right now. Because that's exactly how they should be approaching it, I think.
I don't think it will come in quite those terms. It's going to be, you know, we lost a challenge, but this isn't that bad because X, Y, and Z in typical analytic Cochran fashion. But you're right. I'm hoping to see something like that from him, just to see confirmation that he does know what he's doing out there. Because I'm not saying he doesn't. It's just that this editing continues to be so weird, where it just doesn't. We just can't form opinions about anyone or anything.
Well, let's talk about have we talked too much about Cochran yet to get more into it?
Well, I thought we had, unless you have anything more to say about him.
Oh well, just I want to just be clear. I think as things stand now, if we do end up merging at 12, much like I said about Malcolm. Every single thing I have seen out of Cochran this season has signaled to me that he's going to know, he has very much learned from his first time. He spent a lot of time thinking about the game and how to approach it. And I think he is, I think Malcolm's physical presence could be a huge benefit for Cochran because we are about to hit the tipping point where his physical inability, I guess, for a lack of a better word, is going to work hugely in his favor. I think he is solidly at number two, if not number one. And I think he and Malcolm are by far the top two for me.
Okay, I want the first part to be true, and I agree that he's a prohibitive favorite, but to play devil's advocate for a moment, what has he had to do so far? So at the first vote, he comes in with more natural allies than anybody else on either tribe, and he gets to play off a pre-existing rivalry between Francesco and Philip. So he didn't really have to do anything there. All he had to do was not say anything stupid, and he was going to be safe. And now the next time we get to see him really play a part in anything relevant at all is this episode, where... Yeah, sure, he plays a part in the deliberations, but, you know, that decision could have been made without him. It doesn't seem like he was the driving force behind it. And so, yeah, sure, everything went as planned, but that's not great evidence that he's really set up his game at all.
What I'm thinking more are small things in his interactions that I've seen, like way back when Andrea was ready to start voting out Corinne, and she was pitching it to Cochran about how awful Corinne had been, and his input was, yeah, you know, she and Malcolm are getting really close. And it seems like that's a very obvious thing that what Andrea is going to hear is Cochran saying, I'm totally with you. But what Cochran's saying is nothing that's not already known. Like, he's not overcommitting anything. And similarly, I think this last round, when we saw the favorites debating, you know, Cochran and Don wanted to vote out Matt, and they were trying to pitch voting Matt to Corinne and Philip, who themselves wanted to vote out Julia. And Cochran's kind of just stating facts about reason, you know, the implications of those facts being, you know, Matt is the smarter boot, you know, he's in a pair, they probably has more room to work post-merge, Julia's boring, et cetera. And Don's flat out saying it's got to be Matt, and everyone else is saying it's got to be Julia, and he's just kind of leading people to the conclusion that he wants them to come to, and they end up going to that conclusion. I'm not spacing so much. It's more the small interactions I've seen is interpersonal dynamics. Are really impressing me. And more to the point, the first boot, by the way, last time around, he had the lock first boot in Semhar, and he did every goddamn thing he could to try to make it him, and that, not doing that this time.
See, I just don't see that kind of additive direction that you seem to be seeing there. Like, I think this is what South Pacific Cochran was capable of. I don't think he's really, like, evolved dramatically since then. He's obviously in a much better position, which I think is the main reason he's doing so well at the moment, but I don't think he's really changed in any great way.
I agree that this would definitely be something that South Pacific Cochran, I don't think he would be playing it as well as he is right now, just because, you know, experience helps. But I absolutely agree that, and it's more the general point, what we saw out of Cochran in South Pacific is going, I stand by, is by no means anything close to what we'd see out of him in a normal season, and I think this is much closer to that.
Okay, that's fair. I'm obviously rooting for Cochran as hard as you are. I want everything that you're saying to be true. When I challenge the claims that you're making, like, in this case or in general, it's just so hard to make, like, a convincing argument against them because there's just no evidence we can really draw on. It's, as I keep going back to, in most seasons, even ones like One World, where everything seems to be pretty static, nothing's really changing, there are always new interesting arguments we can make and lots of evidence we can use to support that. Here, though, it's so bizarre. Like, do you see what I'm getting at?
I do. And it's because we had the Phillips show and Brandon and Shamar and something. We've just seen so little out of these people. And again, by no means am I saying that, like, this is a done deal, lock it up or whatever. I'm just thinking down the line, as far as both game logic and what I've seen out of him so far, I think he's going to be in a position to crush post-merge, and I'm confident that he's going to play it well, if not, take it down. And I think Malcolm, the same could be said about Malcolm, too.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see how well both of them do. I've said I'm going to be excited about other things this season, and I still remain pretty unsatisfied, but yeah, hopefully we can, that can be the exception to prove. That's a fucking cliche, Jesus Christ.
I also hate that, by the way, the exception that proves the rule. If there's an exception, it's not
a fucking rule. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing how those two manage to play at post-merge. I've been hoping about other things this season, which haven't really panned out, but I'm hoping that that can actually come to fruition this time.
Mm-hmm. So what more do you want to get into about Bacall now?
I don't think there is anything, really. Like, we have Corinne, but we get to see Season 17 Corinne in full forces episode, which, I mean, thank God for that. I mean...
Oh, yeah, I've been waiting a long time to see more out of Corinne. I don't know if it's just... I don't know what they were... I understand they have a lot of big characters to show early on, and that Corinne's, cutting confessionals may not always be what they're going for. Maybe she wasn't talking too much or whatever. Where I like you said, I guess I'm sorry for Rand. Like I'm absolutely thrilled for Corinne. I was, as I said, after Cochran, she was the one I was the most excited to see back, and I'm very happy to see her finally delivering here.
Yeah, what she's saying loses a bit of its shock value. Yeah, okay, she has Philip, who's obviously like a caricature of himself and someone who's easy to make fun of, but it loses its force precisely because it's someone who the audience knows is supposed to be a laughingstock, right? Because when she's making fun of someone who you can relate to and who you actually like, it hits home a lot harder when she's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, anytime, much like when I was talking about what Cochran said to Andrea, anytime someone says something that you can convince yourself you agree with, you'll do so. And Corinne, obviously Corinne's an extraordinarily extreme example of that case. Yeah. So very optimistic, I think. I'm hoping to see more out of Corinne. The thing we're obviously being set up for this big Corinne and Philip showdown. I'm looking forward to that very much, because I think that's going to be great TV, and it's not in the form of crazy people doing crazy things that are going to have severe negative impact on other people's lives. I'm hoping it culminates in, much like we saw between her and Sugar, one of them being in the finals and the other one giving, like, the most bitter jury speech of all time as they announce that they will not be voting for that person.
Yeah, but again, it's like, that's what you come to expect there. With Sugar, the reason that was so impactful was precisely because it broke, like, this explicit taboo, where, like, you don't bring up someone's dead father, and if you do, it would be someone who has done something so egregious that you have basically no choice, whereas Sugar, despite what she was actually doing out there, was being portrayed as, the lovable, sympathetic underdog who was playing with her heart, and so that gave it a lot of weight. Whereas with Philip, what are you going to do? Like, maybe insult his parenting ability or something? Like, it's going to be like more trite than we would want from Corinne, I think.
Grace card.
I don't think Corinne will go that far.
No, I don't either.
I don't think she wants to be seen to go that far.
And I think she genuinely did dislike Sugar a lot more than she genuinely, like, I think she just views Philip as like a clown who's completely unaware and who she doesn't even need to take seriously, like, as a person. Like, Sugar was putting on a character of, this is truly who I am, and I think she knows that's not the case with Philip. Yeah, so very excited to see about how everything's going to play out going forward. I think that's basically going to do it for us this week. Dom, anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, I think we're good.
All right, well, thank you very much, everyone who listened. We will be back next week with our good friend Albert, as mentioned, and can't wait for that. We will talk to you guys then. Take care.